The Bruins and Celtics hit the stretch run of the regular season, the Bruins pursuing history, and the Celtics are still a shot at that number one seed, and the Patriots say goodbye to Devin McCourty. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Boston Bruins back on pace for the most wins and points in NHL history after this most recent five-game winning streak. Bruins will be inside the TD Garden today at 1 as they take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Bruins are the number one team in the NHL. There is no question about that in terms of the regular season and favorites to win the Stanley Cup. They're also pursuing history. 63 wins would give them the most in NHL history. 133 points would give them the most points in NHL history. They have 11 games remaining. They are 55-11-5, 115 points overall. Their goaltending tandem is the best in hockey. Linus Ullmark, number one. Jeremy Swayman, number three, when it comes to goals allowed and save percentage. Hampus Lindholm, who we're going to hear from in just a little bit, he is one of the favorites for the Norris Trophy this year. The Hart for MVP, well, that's going to go to Connor McDavid. But in the conversation, in a normal year, David Pastrnak, who now has 49 goals, most in his career, a chance to hit that magical 50 number today against the Lightning. Last time a Bruin had 50 goals was Cam Neely. 29 years ago, back in the 93-94 season, and David Pastrnak looking to equal the Bruins team president's total in this contest today. So let's look back a little bit before we go forward. Bruins win over the Montreal Canadiens 4-2. They beat the Ottawa Senators 2-1. These games were defined by the Bruins making the most of their opportunities. Montreal, I thought, kind of carried the play throughout most of the game against the Bruins, outshot them, outchanced them. But when it came down to the Bruins found a way to win. Ottawa, pretty much the same situation on Tuesday in a 2-1 victory against the Senators. Bruins once again capitalized on their opportunities. Jake DeBrusk continues at a torrid streak. He has 7 points in his last 4 games, including 4 goals. And another pretty one for Jake in this one.
It felt like little old-time hockey tonight with this rivalry. How much did you enjoy that?
Yeah, obviously two original six teams. You know, I think it was obviously anytime that Berge gets hit like that, we're going to react. And I actually didn't see what happened, but you could just hear the crowd go, so I knew something was going on. But there's a couple other scrums, and, you know, obviously these whenever these two teams match up, we always play each other hard.
7 points, 4 goals in the last 4 games for you. What's been going right?
7-4, hey? Yeah, no, just some puck luck, and obviously just trying to get to the hard areas and just trying to play my game. And at the same time, I think that I've gotten, like I said, feels like yesterday, I've gotten some really good passes, so I'm just trying to bear down. I could have had a couple more tonight, and it's one of those things where I'm just trying to build my game, and as we all are, to, you know, and going to the playoffs.
Yeah, it was kind of that old school type of hockey game. Patrice Bergeron got run hit well after he had let go of the puck. Then Brad Marchand jumped that dude in the crease, dropped the gloves, they headed off. A lot of big hits in this game. It felt like old school Canadiens, Bruins, no question about that. I mentioned Hampus Lindholm. Lindholm leads the NHL in plus minus. And in my view, if you consider the overall game, the points, everything, impact, how good the team is, he's got to be in the conversation for the Norris Trophy of the top NHL defenseman. I spoke with him after the Bruins 2-1 victory over Ottawa on Tuesday.
Hampus, it seemed like this was one of those games where Linus really stepped up for you guys, particularly, you know, in the first period, to getting things started on the right foot.
Yeah, no, he's been huge all year, and he's been doing it numerous of times now. And I think we can have his back a little bit more, but it's fun to watch him play.
This is one of those games where it felt like you just found a way to win. There were some things to clean up maybe with puck handling.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like, in especially in the second there, I think we maybe turn it over a little bit too much. I think especially there in the back-to-back, maybe get it down behind them. I think we have some really good forwards. Well, you usually get it back too, but maybe play a little easier there. But it's a tough line. They're a good team as well. So, but Linus came up huge for us.
On the Krejci goal, are you thinking rebound, put the shot up high, and it's either Krejci or Berge you're going to get there?
Yeah, Berge gave me a good little flash screen there, and I know he's good with a stick, and I kind of got the, if you get a shot from the slot right, like that, you kind of want to take it, so I end up ripping it in, and great job by Berge, and then Krejci going there, crashing the net.
when you're playing with that top power play unit, what's the mindset there, and you know what you're thinking in terms of moving the puck, allowing for shot lanes, getting it off the stick quick?
Yeah, no, it's just moving the puck quick, let the puck do the work, and then put guys in good spots and myself in good spots too, because you have that one man advantage out there. You want to take advantage of it and build some momentum if you don't get a goal.
When it comes to Linus, and why do you think he is so effective in terms of rebound control, reflex? It seems like he's put it all together this year. What stands out to you about why he's had the success he's had?
No, I think Bob does a really good job working with the goals here, and I think his competitiveness he has in practice and all around, even off the ice, like it's fun to watch, and I think that feeds into his gameplay. Never quits, keeps playing no matter what, and I think that's kind of speaks to the whole group as well too. So it's fun to be part of.
He says he has like this mindset in close situations where he's able to just be very chill.
Yeah.
Is that rare for a goaltender or for a player in general where the pressure gets higher for him to be kind of like loose? And are there any examples of how he is loose?
Yeah, but I think also like him, both him and I, we've been in the league for a little bit. You learn, right? Like you've had moments maybe when you weren't calm and it didn't really go your way. So if you've been around the situation, so you learn from it. And I think he's really been just having a lot of years here when he's put that all together into one great year. And I think they've been working a lot of things, him and Bob, and all the goalie stuff they've been doing. So I think they've been just building him up, and I think he's been just showcasing it.
Finally, when it comes to team defense, what goes into that? Because obviously your goalies have the best numbers in the league.
Yeah.
But it's an overall dynamic, correct? Offensive zone possession obviously takes pressure off of you guys.
Yeah.
How would you define the dynamic that's led to you guys being the best defensive team?
No, I think we do a good job like working as a five-man unit there in D-zone and maybe not give them too many. Like if they get shots, like at least get the rebounds and let them face the shot, the goalies, and doing those little things. I think we've been doing a good job with that so far. I think tonight, obviously in second there, we can clean it up a little bit. But overall, all year round, I think we've been doing a good job with that.
The goaltending situation is interesting. Bruins have gone back and forth between their goalies over the last 16 games, splitting it even 8-8. Now, it's clear that Linus Ullmark is going to win the Vezina Trophy for the best goalie in hockey. But as I mentioned, he's number one and Jeremy Swayman's number three in terms of stats. They've split the time in the regular season, but do the Bruins think about doing that in the postseason and playing the two as a tandem as opposed to a number one starter? That is something I talked with Bruins head coach Jim Montgomery about.
I do think there's a physical and a mental benefit. I mean, like we're playing four games every week, right? So they're each getting two games a week. So, it's significant. It's perfect, actually, when you have a split. It's not perfect for the players. It's perfect for our goalies, Our goalies, we're fortunate. We have two elite goaltenders, and, they obviously are great teammates. I think their goalie hug is something that I admired from afar. It spoke to the togetherness of the Bruins culture, and I think it's awesome.
Do you consider, having them go in the playoffs as a tandem versus having a number one goaltender?
I mean, we would have no issues with it. I don't know if we're going to do that.
But is something would you consider, or do you want to do like you want to have like a defined number one?
I think we'll start with one of them. Most likely, Linus is going to start the first game, and then we'll see how it goes game to game from there. I'm not going to commit to anything beyond game one.
I'll check in on the Boston Celtics now. As the Celtics coming off a West Coast swing, still in the mix for the top spot in the Eastern Conference, but it's been an inconsistent second half for Boston. Boston looked like they were going to be the number one seed in the NBA, no question about it, but they have fallen off in the second half of the year. Celtics are a team, obviously, that is contending for a championship. In my view, the best team in the NBA. We consider the star power, the depth, the whole thing. But for whatever reason, the Celtics have not maximized their potential in the second half of the year. So the question is, do they turn it on for the postseason and play up to the competition and end up having success? Or is this team teetering out at the wrong time? There's also the remarks of Jaylen Brown in a recent interview in which he seems to be perhaps burned out by the Celtics fans, maybe to some extent, the organization as well. Floated in trade rumors once again, despite being one of the best players in the NBA, his name came up when it came to Kevin Durant and a potential trade. And he's 26. You know, Kevin Durant's 34. It's, you know, a guy in Jalen who is looking to be the cornerstone of the franchise moving forward, along with Jason Tatum, to play together for years and years and years. And, you know, he also hears it from the fan base. When he's not doing well, he hears he's too interested in, you know, social issues and advancing his own agenda and not necessarily with the team. When Tatum doesn't do well, he's too worried about his promotions. He's selfish. He doesn't care about winning a championship as much as he cares about being a pitch man. So that's something that's difficult for a player to deal with. Like, you expect there to be haters out there, but when the haters are your own fans, that's, you know, something that's a different thing a little bit in regard to Boston experience. I think it's kind of generalized, and if you look for it, you're going to find it in any fan base, but maybe more so, you know, with Boston than other places. Anyway, that's something that he's dealing with. I talked with Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla.
I mean, I think just trying to treat them, like I said, listen to who they are, understand where they're coming from. Everybody has different perspectives, different passions, different backgrounds, and so it's important, I think, to appreciate those, you know, because we all have them, and so I think that's really important.
What do you think is the best way for players to navigate a lot of the different things that come your way when you make yourself vulnerable and put your views and express those views out there, and then other people may want to, you know, jump on that and make negativity out of it?
Yeah, it seems to be the trend. If you believe in something, stick with it, you know, and that's really it. And, you know, have the people around you that support you, and just understand that in the world today, everyone has an opinion, has a perspective, and nothing is either good or bad. It just kind of is what it is. And so just navigating that with a perspective, I think, is important. And sticking to what you believe in.
How do you use these final 8-9 games to put yourselves in the best possible position to be, you know, ready when the playoffs start? What does that look like?
Just focus on the habits. Focus on when we're at our best. You know, mimic the times of when we're doing things really, really well. I thought Sacramento was good in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I felt like that game was kind of who we are, our identity. And so, you know, we want to be playing just that consistent basketball as much as we can.
There's obviously been ups and downs in terms of those habits. Is that the product of a long NBA season, or is there anything there to make you think that maybe when the playoffs start, this team will still fall into some of those negative habits?
I mean, human nature has been around a long time, so I would imagine that a lot of it is just, you know, the ebbs and flows of navigating an NBA season, and then understanding, you know, we're not going to be perfect even when we get into the playoffs, but we got to just be as consistent and as detailed as we can.
Also spoke with Celtics guard Derek White.
What are you looking for from this team over the final, you know, 8-9 games of the season? What type of habits do you want to see established to know that you're going to be playoff ready when it's time?
I'm just going to just keep improving. 8-9 games. Try to go in healthy, but just work on the things that we've been working on all year and things that we know we're going to see during the playoffs.
How big a priority is the number one seed? Is that something that's still focused upon, or are there bigger goals?
I mean, if we get the one seed, it's cool. If we don't, it's the same. We didn't have it last year. And so we just want to be playing the best basketball going into the playoffs, and whether we're the 1, 2, 3, it doesn't really matter.
In regard to Jalen's situation with the fan base and more generally, like, how do you go about dealing with negativity from your own fan base? Like, you expect to hear it perhaps from other fans, but how do you deal with negativity when it's coming from, you know, your fan base?
Yeah, I mean, you try to block it out. Obviously, there's a lot of fans that treat us well, and there's obviously people that say things that they probably wouldn't say if it wasn't for Twitter or whatnot. So try to just block it out. Understand even the good and the bad, it could go bad either way. So I understand that deep down they say what they say, but it doesn't affect, like, the work you put in or the passion that you have for this sport.
After the finals, there's a lot of talk about the grind and how you guys were kind of tired at that point. How do you feel, you know, going into the postseason in terms of how you've been able to manage, you know, rest this year? And do you feel as though, particularly for, you know, a guy like Jason and Jalen have carried big weight, that they're in a good place, and you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in a good place. They look like they're in a good place. Me personally, I feel good. I'm ready to go. And I mean, the postseason, a whole nother season on its own, is a different type of grind, and I think we're all prepared for it.
Celtics could be bolstered by the return of sharpshooter Dalen Gallinari, who along with Malcolm Brogdon, were the key offseason acquisitions that were supposed to add depth and really help the Celtics win a championship. An injury prior to the season has sidelined Gallinari to this point. He's starting to work his way back, but I still think it's kind of a stretch to think that he is going to, you know, practice and then jump into a playoff series, having played no regular season games throughout the course of the season. However, I wanted to know if that's something that he's shooting for right now.
Do you think a return in the playoffs is possible, or are you looking more towards next season?
Playoffs is still in my head, so that's something that I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it's, on the motivation standpoint, is always something that motivates me more. But I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
For you, what would you have to see to feel like you could step in and make, you know, an impact in those types of games?
Yeah, I mean, of course, something, you know, you will have to go through like 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, play 5-on-5. So a lot of things that, a lot of steps that needs to be done before you play an actual game. And maybe even after those, all those steps, you're not ready for a playoff game, because when you don't play the whole season and then be ready to play a playoff game is not easy for anybody, not just body wise but mentally wise. But like I said, it might happen, so we'll see.
Indeed, we will. Back to the Bruins now, and there have been a lot of Bruins that are having their best seasons. But most notably, you know, Jake DeBrusk and Trent Frederick, guys that did not flourish under previous head coach Bruce Cassidy, who is said to be hard on young players and didn't allow for them to develop and make mistakes. Jake DeBrusk is playing on the Bruins' top line along with Brad Marchand as well as Patrice Bergeron. And his game against the Ottawa Senators on Tuesday was a standout performance for a couple of reasons. An incredible goal, awesome pass by Marchand, and then, you know, the poise to score on the backhand when your initial thought is perhaps to let that puck go as opposed to keep it on your stick, move through the netminder, and then score on the backhand. He also had a play on the back check in which Claude Giroux is coming in on Ullmark, and he turned on the Jets. He got back and he knocked the puck off of the stick of Giroux before he could have a breakaway opportunity on the Bruins goalie. To me, this has been, without question, Jake DeBrusk's best year. Obviously, there's the injury in the Winter Classic that set him aside a little bit, but DeBrusk was also the star of the Winter Classic, scoring two goals in that game. I talked with number 74 of the Boston Bruins inside the Bruins dressing room.
Do you feel like this has been your best season? Obviously, the injury in the Winter Classic, but overall, do you feel most comfortable, like this has been your best NHL season?
Probably, yes. I mean, I think I looked at it when I was injured, and I loved my start and loved how it was kind of going, and my consistency of my game, that was the biggest thing, or the last thing I've had to kind of deal with, I guess, from the outside is my consistency, and I just wanted to be a hardworking player and do anything I can to play with those guys. And that's kind of been my goal ever since I've been put with them. And but at the same time, I don't think it'll be my best ever. I mean, I think I'm actually just getting more used to certain roles, more used to different things, and trying to get better each day.
From a mental standpoint, where do you find yourself? As you mentioned, you on the goal, maybe you would think a little bit too much in the past, but you just kind of played and went to the backhand as opposed to putting the puck on the net. Like, do you see yourself in those spots more where you're just kind of going with instinct and trusting your instinct as opposed to maybe second guessing?
Well, yeah, it definitely helps when things are going well. You know, it's one of those things where it has been throughout the whole year, and I feel like if, you know, back in the past or even say a couple games ago, maybe I would have been a little more hesitant to try something like that. But at the same time, I think I'm just kind of like, I'm just going off my instincts, whether it works or doesn't work. And sometimes it's a little bit frustrating, but another time it goes in the net, and you live and you learn as you know you go through the league. It's been my sixth year now, so I've seen lots of those dips and valleys, and it's just honestly just trying to put the puck in the net. It's one of those things where I just want to reward Marsh for his pass, but it's one of those quick plays that can go either way. You know, I could have easily went shelf, easily went five hole, or he makes a save. It honestly is all variable, but I'm obviously very happy with the net.
In this being your best season, obviously it's all three zones, and I thought, you know, the second period on the back check, you come in, you dive, you make the play. Like, Where have you expanded in that area, and in what ways do you see yourself as a better three-zone player?
I think being on the penalty kill for the last 2 years has helped a lot. I think it kind of makes it so it's, you know, it's not necessarily defensive mode. I think I'm out there for my speed to possibly generate some offense, but it makes you think about it. And also playing against top-line players every single night with these guys is not easy. You know, you have an off night, you'll get exposed, so you got to be on at all times, and it's just learning through those. And I think there was actually a couple back checks tonight. Like, I think our whole team was, we're all aboard on that. I mean, it's one of those things where it's not the best, but it's a sense of if there's a breakaway or something, you're going to try as hard as you can to get back, and I can skate fast, so it looks a little easier, I guess.
What's this team's best attribute in your view as you kind of roll through the regular season here? What makes this team click?
I think obviously our chemistry has been talked about a lot, but I think the biggest thing is just our depth. I think that's the thing you need to win in this league consistently, and I think that usually evens out in playoffs. The top two lines usually even each other out, and it's the third and fourth lines that win you cups. You can go all the way back to Anaheim when they won. It's kind of the trend, or you know, even Tampa Bay and certain things like that. But I think that's the biggest thing is why we're so lethal.
Let's go across the ice right now to get a feel for how the Bruins' opponents are feeling about this team. We'll start with the Montreal Canadiens' Mike Matheson, who grew up just outside of Montreal. And, of course, the Bruins and Canadiens used to play all the time. They don't anymore. Only three games this year. And I think that's a huge loss. I talked with Matheson.
What stood out to you about tonight? It felt like one of those kind of old school hockey type games. It felt like you maybe carried the play a little bit more than them. But what stood out to you most?
I think early on we definitely carried the play, and they're a great team, and we gave them a couple chances there, and they capitalized, and that's a tough thing to do against a team like that. I think there was a lot of intensity. I think oftentimes coming down the stretch, there's certain teams that are in their position and some that are in ours, and sometimes those can be a bit of a nothing game, and I think it was far from that. And I think that's great for us, too. It means it doesn't do us any good going down the stretch to just play easy nothing games. The only way we're going to get better is playing those types of games.
These two teams used to play each other like 7-8 times a season, and now it's like, you know, 3 or 4 times per year. Would you like to see them more, and is there kind of a frustration that these types of rivalries, in-division rivalries, can't really, you know, flourish in this current environment?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think when you can look at it both ways, like that, yeah, that'd be fun to see those games more often, but when they're less often, they're that much more special. So I guess there's two different ways of looking at it, and like I said, I think it was a great game. We really would have liked to have that one, but they ended up capitalizing on the chances they got.
You've seen the league at this point. How good is this Bruins team? Are they well above everybody else? Are there other teams that could, you know, knock them off when it comes to the postseason?
They're really deep, and that's so important in the playoffs. It's so hard to know, really, right, until the playoffs start and series get going, and they definitely have a great chance.
Here's Ottawa netminder Matt Sogard and what he saw from the Bees on Tuesday night.
Challenges they present for you as a netminder, particularly with the rush and then the secondary rush when they're able to develop possession in the offensive zone.
Yeah, you see it on the second goal, right? You know, just out of nowhere, there's a guy sneaking back and going across like a really, really nice play. So I think the biggest thing for me, I noticed early on was just how aware I had to be of where everybody are. There's a reason they're at the top of the league and they have that many wins for sure, right? Like, so you just got to be really aware of where everybody are and do your best to get in the way.
It seems like they get to the net a lot too. And as a netminder, what type of pressure is there for you knowing that they're around the net, they're going to be scrapping like on the Krejci goal?
That's what good hockey teams do. It's a battle for sure with the amount of traffic and amount of bodies. There's a shot coming and you pretty much know if you put the rebound a bad spot, there's a second chance coming. So I think just small details for myself to dial in the you know, where I put the rebound or make sure I cover a puck or something like that was important for me today. So I thought, like I said, it was a step in the right direction for myself. And as a group, I really liked our game.